I'm Kevin Hatchard, and this is the Ultimate Sports Podcast. Coming up this week, we'll review England's progress so far, or indeed lack of it, in the European Under-21 Championships. We'll look ahead to England's first match in cricket's Champions Trophy as they take on Australia. We'll also talk Formula One ahead of the Canadian Grand Prix in Montreal. We'll look ahead to the British and Irish Lions clash with Queensland Reds on Saturday and England's battle with Argentina. And we'll also talk tennis as the French Open final. I will also talk tennis ahead of the French Open final between Maria Sharapova and Serena Williams. But we'll start with football and disappointment for England so far at the European Under-21 Championships. They were beaten 1-0 by Italy in their opening match, and their manager Stuart Pearce was far from happy with the performance.
The better side won, if I'm being honest with you. They caused us problems and we didn't get any performances, probably from our bigger players within the game as well. So got to learn by it, these boys. We didn't play well enough, that's for sure. And we've got to reload again, get ready for Saturday and try and win a game Saturday.
England have two games left, starting with Saturday's clash with Norway, who are seen as the rank outsiders, but they did draw 2-2 with the hosts Israel in their opening group game. I'm joined by sports broadcaster Jake Robson. And Jake, not the start that England wanted, and you feel that their squad isn't perhaps as strong as it should be.
Absolutely not. It's not as strong as it should be because of the senior players, or the players that are playing for the senior squad that aren't there, or indeed the ones that are injured. You can't do anything about injuries, but I definitely feel that players like Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, just to name one, Danny Welbeck to name another, should have been with the England Under-21 squad. They qualify to play for England Under-21s. It's a major tournament. There's just so many reasons why they should be there, because not least of which, they were playing for the senior squad in friendlies. They weren't even competitive matches. It gives them experience going into perhaps next summer in Brazil, tournament football. It'll be good perhaps for them to potentially win all together as a group, because then they'll be coming through in the next few years, all the other players that are in the squad. It just makes sense. And then when England lose, is it that surprising? I don't know. I think Stuart Pearce, I think if they'd won, he might not have said anything about it. But I think it just highlights, you know, it was papering over the cracks if we'd won.
I suppose the argument against that might be that England went into the tournament off the back of 9 straight wins, and I don't think they conceded a goal in that period either. So there is a feeling that Stuart Pearce has quality at his disposal. I think you're right, though. I think there is a different attitude in England to Under-21 football than there is from other countries. You look at the Spain squad, it's very, very strong. And you also look at Germany. They've got a lot of top Bundesliga players in their team as well. So, yeah, I certainly can see where you're coming from in terms of England don't have all their weapons available, and maybe they should. But I think it does show the depth available to Stuart Pearce that even without those players, he has managed to qualify impressively for the tournament. If England don't manage to get the 6 points that they probably need from these two games, Stuart Pearce's contract is up. It's probably it for him, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, well, you argue whether he might move on anyway after the tournament. He's been there quite a long time. Completely sort of overlooked for the England senior role when it came around. He was never even mentioned it. And when he got given the job, everybody thought, oh, well, this is their sort of grooming him.
The next
exactly.
Level, yeah.
And that sort of just never really happened. But yeah, it could be curtains for Psycho.
Well, let's switch our attention to cricket then. England play their opening match in the Champions Trophy at Edgbaston on Saturday as they take on Australia. England going into the tournament off the back of a rare series defeat at home. They lost 2-1 to New Zealand, but they at least managed to win the third one day at Trent Bridge, and that was partially due to an extraordinary quick-fire innings from Joss Butler, who struck 47 off just 16 balls in a remarkable performance. And after a poor run of form, really, from Butler, I think he'd only averaged 9 off his first 9 one days. So he's happy to have found form, and he's happy with the backing he's received from the England management.
It's great to contribute to a winning side, put in a performance like that that can give me some confidence. Great to have people like Ashley Giles and Alistair Cook saying, you know, we're backing you. So it's great to have that faith from them.
Good to see Joss Butler in form. But there were problems for England. They looked a better unit when Finn and Broad were back fit. That will help, won't it, having two top-line bowlers back in there. Do you think England do have a chance of winning this Champions Trophy?
They definitely got a chance. I mean, they were second favourite. They were favourites, I think, before the New Zealand series to win the Champions Trophy. And then afterwards, they were second favourites. So the bookies, you know, you can't suddenly say that the bookies don't know what they're talking
English
about.
English supporters always back England, though, don't they? Well, so England are always going to be fairly short for a home tournament.
I personally don't think that they will win. But the last time it was here, they got to the final against the West Indies. They lost probably a game they should have won. I think it was back in 2004. Even that being said, I personally think that they're, when it comes down to it, when it comes down to those really sort of the latter stages in a tournament, they don't deliver generally because the batting's not good enough.
But they did win the World 2020 not that long ago, I guess. So at least they do have one major trophy in the bag, I guess. But their opening games against Australia, their preparations have been even worse. Bowled out for 65 against India in their warm-up game. Michael Clarke injured, so they haven't got the skipper. They're in trouble, aren't they, really?
They're in trouble. I would fancy that England will get out of the group, and I don't think Australia will.
Well, Sri Lanka and New Zealand, the other teams in that group. Just a question on New Zealand, actually, because I was very impressed with them over the three matches, even the fact they pushed it fairly close, having been set at quite a big target at Trent Bridge. They look a tighter unit at that level than they do perhaps at Test level, and they've got a good array of bowlers, haven't they?
They do. I think it's fair to say they've always looked more comfortable at one day level than they have at Test level. I mean, just some of the players that they've got there with, you know, Brendan McCullum, obviously down the years, Daniel Vittori has been a great one day player. He's obviously missing.
Guptill's in good form.
Guptill's in good form. I think, you know, their bowlers, and their bowlers are sort of more suited to the one day game, but also they've always been noted for how well they field and how good they are in the field. And that's obviously much better suited to one day cricket.
Well, let's talk Formula One now. The Canadian Grand Prix takes place in Montreal on Sunday. And Jake, just ahead of this one, Sebastian Vettel clear at the top of the driver's standings. Is this going to be a procession to another title for him, or do you think the other drivers will manage to make it a bit more tricky for him?
Well, I think Fernando Alonso is always fancied as potentially actually the best driver. And everybody always, all the talk is always that Alonso should perhaps do in a better, in a more reliable, better car with a better team around him. Obviously, Ferrari are great, but it would be interesting to see what could happen if he maybe went to Red Bull next year. Or indeed Vettel moved to Ferrari. I'm not sure if either of those will happen. But I think that based on what happened last season and with Alonso in a far less good car than Vettel, it's definitely not going to be a procession. Alonso is going to be there or thereabouts. Interestingly enough, he's actually won two races already this season, as has Sebastian Vettel. So it's not, you know, he's not that far behind Vettel. And I think he had in the Malaysian Grand Prix, I think it was, he didn't finish. He went out on in the early stages. So it's kind of, you know, it's kind of freak results like that that would mean that he's sort of 30 points behind.
And the sport needs a tight title race, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And there will be one. There was one last year. It went down to the last race. I mean, Kimi Raikkonen seems to always be there or thereabouts. He did win the opening race, but he doesn't win that many races, but he still always, you know, gets a lot of podium finishes.
He seems to be in a competitive car this year as well.
Exactly. Personally, I'm not sure it'll be good over the distance. He's going to probably struggle to actually challenge for the top spot, but he's going to be there or thereabouts. He's obviously a great driver. You know, he's the number one driver in his team. And yeah, absolutely. I think it's still going to be a good season. I think Lewis Hamilton. It's unfortunate that the car he's in, he hasn't quite clicked with yet.
Rosberg's racked up a win.
Absolutely, yeah, exactly. So it's kind of see what can be done there, and again, I don't think he's going to challenge for the title, but it should be good. It's been a pretty good season so far.
And just finally on this, looking ahead to the race specifically, I'm led to believe plenty of overtaking opportunities, so could be in for an exciting race.
Absolutely. For example, complete contrast to the last race, Monaco, where the pole sitter was the winner in the end. Very difficult to pass. Canada, absolutely, especially with the tyres, because suddenly when the tyres just go off what they call the cliff when they stop working on a sort of high speed track like that, where it's very heavy on the tyres, so they obviously disintegrate much more quickly. You can get a lot more overtaking done.
Just before we move away from Formula One, Jake, just fill us in on this Mercedes situation with Pirelli, because Mercedes are being accused, I gather, of performing a test with Pirelli tyres that was unfair to the other teams. Just clear this one up for us. What is going on?
Well, I will do my
How
best.
How many hours have we got?
How many hours? Well, it's actually not that clear at the moment, because you'd think basically what's happened is that Mercedes have done a test with using Pirelli tyres, and the general feeling is that teams aren't allowed to test during the season.
Right.
So it's been disputed by the other teams as to, so they want sort of clarification of what Mercedes were doing. Mercedes have said it's absolutely fine. They haven't done anything outside the laws. They were doing exactly what Pirelli was asking of them. So Pirelli was saying, now test this, rather than McLaren going, oh, can we try this?
So Mercedes haven't had an advantage. Mercedes. Yeah, they're saying they haven't had an advantage from this. They were merely asked to do it.
Absolutely.
By Pirelli.
They even claim that they didn't know what tyres they were testing, what compound of tyre they were testing at any given point. So you do think to yourself, if it's got to this stage, surely they knew that they weren't doing anything wrong, or they were given absolute assurances they weren't doing anything wrong. But we'll wait and see.
Wouldn't be Formula One without a bit of off-track controversy. Let's move on to rugby union then, and we'll start with the British and Irish Lions, who take on Queensland Reds on Saturday morning. The Lions have already racked up wins against the Barbarians and Western Force, but the skipper Sam Warburton missed both of those matches with a knee injury, but he's back fit and ready to rumble.
It's nice seeing all the boys getting their jerseys back, bringing them back to the hotel, their Lions jerseys, and it's been tough to watch the last two games, just dying to get on the pitch on Saturday. Yeah, couldn't come quick enough.
So the Lions looking to make it three wins out of three. Elsewhere, England are in action away to Argentina. The first of two tests should be a very intriguing encounter between two experimental sides. And the England standing captain, Tom Wood, is looking forward to the match.
They're a fairly young team like us, and I think they'll have a lot to prove themselves. So there'll be a lot of emotion, a lot at stake, and pretty fiery encounter.
So plenty of rugby action to look forward to as well. Now, at the time of recording this, we don't know what the lineup is for the French Open men's tennis final, but we do know what the lineup is in the ladies' singles. Serena Williams has swept aside all before her so far. It's a good performance at Roland Garros from her, which is not something she's come to expect. She's reached this stage for the first time in over a decade, and she'll take on the defending champion Maria Sharapova. Now, Jake, interesting the contrast between the two semi-finals, because Serena Williams absolutely mauled Sara Errani. She only dropped a game against her, whereas Sharapova, an erratic performance, but ultimately a good one against Victoria Azarenka.
Absolutely, but you also have to take into account that Azarenka is definitely a tougher opponent than Sara Errani is.
Although Errani got to the final last year,
she did. Yeah, but you'd say sort of over a season that the result like that. You wouldn't necessarily expect Serena Williams to win that easily. But the one thing that we can't often say is that perhaps the women's final could be a bit more exciting than the men's final.
Well, you'd hope so, wouldn't you? Because it's an interesting clash of styles. Sharapova, to me, though, still looks very erratic. The serve isn't quite firing as well as it should be. And Serena looks as though she means business.
Oh, yeah, true. Serena will be the favourite. And down the years with either Williams sisters, really, because of how powerful they are. If they really turn up on the day and the opponent isn't quite there, they can blow them off the court.
And the extraordinary thing about Sharapova as well, she's capable of brilliance, but also Sometimes she looks like she's never picked up a racket before. The first set against Jankovic in the quarterfinals, 20 unforced errors. That was an average of about 3 per game. And she lost 6-love. And she came back to win, so you have to give her credit for that. But this is a big test for her, isn't it? Because I guess her record against Serena Williams isn't great. And if she loses another match to her, then that's another nail in the coffin, isn't it, really?
It is another nail in the coffin. And you've got to maybe wonder what her fitness levels will be at, what levels they'll be at after...
Oh, bearing in mind Williams has breezed through.
That's what I mean.
Absolutely, yeah. Okay, that's it for this week from Jake Robson and myself, Kevin Hatchard. It's goodbye for now.